All right.
Welcome, Outposters, to the latest episode of Outpost Frequencies. Today we're doing something a little different. We're not live streaming at this time. Ben has some interesting ideas to talk about, and if we have some time, we might go into some of the news of the week with Comic-Con, but mostly we're just we wanted to talk about something a little different and fun. So to get the housekeeping out of the way, we are lastmovieoutpost.com. You can find this episode also on your various podcasting software. We're searchable through iTunes. We are at DrunkenYoda1 on Twitter and at Movie Outpost on Twitter. And then on Facebook, we are /lastmovieoutpost. So now that we got all that out of the way, Ben, thank you for joining us.
All right. Yeah. How's it going?
I'm doing good. A man of incredible pageantry, I can see. Yeah, what? What do you want? I got biscuits burning. So talk to me, Ben. What? Tell me about you. Are into art? Art collecting. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. So yeah, I was going to talk about collecting original comic book art.
Specifically comic book art from big name artists and things like that.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm not sure a lot of people know what this is. It's a pretty niche.
I don't do it very often myself, so I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I do want you to kind of explain to guys like me, because I'm not into collecting the art so much. Like, I'll do some movie posters or maybe some props or just little models and stuff, but the actual art, I guess I either never found it in compelling enough to do it, or in too expensive. And there are some artists I really admire, but you're into this. So for you,
yeah.
Why do you do it?
I'm a small fish in this world.
But I mean, if you have more than four.
I started reading comics. You know, I read them a few. Early 80s, 1986 is when it really took off for me. Mm-hmm. I got, Uncanny X-Men 207 and 208. That sort of got my ball rolling. And
what was that story?
It's John Romita Jr. Mm-hmm. It's got a Wolverine cover where Wolverine's slashing down the cover.
Oh, yes.
I know that. It's blue. The cover's blue. And then the one after that's like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, they're fighting on the cover.
Sure.
And then, so I got into X-Men there sort of before it was real mainstream, there was no cartoons or anything like that. I got into a lot of different comics during that time, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Batman,
mostly
New Teen
Marvel,
Titans.
Or did you go...
It was a mixture, but it's probably 75 or 80% Marvel, I'd say for sure. Mm-hmm. Killing Joke, stuff like that. So, I bought the books for a long time. I was into it probably about 10 years. And then my interest started to wane on the comics. I didn't think that the comics were all that good. Really, probably anything, looking back in retrospect, I think that things started to fall apart right around 1989, 1990 for me. But I stuck with it, until early 2000s. I bought less and less. 96, I diminished. By about 2000, I was down to one or two things. The Perez Avengers with Kurt Busiek I was reading. Mm-hmm. And that was about all I was enjoying, really. At that time, Phil Jimenez, Wonder Woman, stuff like that. So I didn't really know about this, that you could even buy this stuff, until about 2001, 2002. I probably knew a little bit, but I wasn't interested in it. It wasn't like I ever saw it, and then I sort of got into it, right around late 2001, early 2002. I got a couple pages. I bought a few. They were, Perez Avengers, and it was, couple $100 for a page, that sort of thing.
Sure. George Perez?
Yeah, George Perez. So I was into that. I was just out of college. I wasn't making a ton of money. I didn't have a lot of disposable income for that sort of thing. I was buying small stuff, basically. There's stuff I liked that I wouldn't pull the trigger on because it was too much. And eventually, it became too much. It became way more than that, you know. So the prices went up, stratosphere stuff. I missed out on a lot of things that I, didn't think long term, things would skyrocket, prices could skyrocket the way that they did.
Did it become a speculator's market, kind of like the way comics blew up and then busted with artwork? Did it follow that same trajectory?
No, it hasn't. It definitely hasn't busted yet. Everybody keeps on thinking there's going to be a correction or something, but a Killing Joke page without the Joker on it and with Batman only from the back just sold for $168,000 in an auction, or $158,000. It was around $160,000.
And you say a page, you're talking about original artwork, like ink.
Yes.
The whole nine yards. This is a
frame. Yeah, penciled inks, the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll show you some in a minute. Some of my samples. So, there was a couple that I kicked myself on not – being more aggressive to get. There was a Fantastic Four 100 page. It was like, this must have been 07, 08. It's right around when I got married. It was on eBay.
Your disposable income.
So it was like $4,000 for this page. It was a great page. It had, if anybody's familiar with the Fantastic Four 100 issue, it's Jack Kirby, Joe Sinnott. They fight android versions of basically everybody they fought in the first, in the 99 issues before that. So Dr. Doom, the Super Skrull, the Dragon Man, all of these guys, and the Puppet Master and the Mad Thinker were running these androids, right? So they fight all these guys, the Red Ghost. So this page was great. It had, anybody has that issue can look through it and find the page I'm talking about. It's got crystals on there, crystals on the page, and then there's a panel that's got Dr. Doom and Kang, like androids of Dr. Doom and Kang, and they're pretty small in this page, but it's a great page. So that page was like 4,000, and then it dropped down to 3,500. They changed the price, they lowered the price. Then they lowered it again to like 3,000, and somebody bought it, I guess, because it was gone. But you couldn't touch that page for that now. I mean, you couldn't get anywhere near that page for that kind of money.
No.
And then there was a John Byrne X-Men page that was like 3,000 or 4,000 from X-Men 143. It was a real good page with Kitty Pryde, and she was fighting this alien that was like the alien from the movie Alien. Mm-hmm. So this Christmas thing, it was a real good page of that. I didn't get that one either. Right. So I didn't pull the trigger on this stuff. Fast forward, I sold some pages. I sold all my comics. I did a bunch of different things, got my collection. My collection's a little bit more diverse. It's a little bit more valuable, I guess you could say. It's
because you either mixed in other stuff or just because you trimmed away things that were not.
So I sold some stuff to buy other things, and I sold stuff at a real good profit too. Was able to finance other things. There were these Oliver Coipel Legion pages I got, and they were they were like $35, between $35 and I think the most I paid for one was about $125. And this was 05, 04. I bought these and they were real cheap. And then once he went on Thor, his pages were like $1,000 a piece. It was like night and day. It was really strange how his artwork was priced, you know, firsthand, not reselling.
Right.
Firsthand, this drastic change. So I bought like six of these Legion pages. I sold those for about, you know, I was probably in these pages $300. I sold them for $500 each. So I got 1,000% increase in value in the sale. And I bought a Jim Lee double page splash. Double page spread. So, you know, this has got some Batman, All-Star Batman and Robin. And Batman doesn't have his mask on for a lot of it, but Robin is in there.
Oh yeah.
And then this page goes with this one. They're side by side. It's one thing. Okay? So this one is the second half of that. And then finally Batman puts his mask on at the end. All right. So I got that one by selling those other ones. So let me talk real quick about sort of like the hierarchy, all things being equal. You know, I got a, behind me is a George Perez cover. You know, so my collection has changed. You know, I had a lot of artwork that was more 1998 on. Now my collection's more, it's more mixed with stuff from the 70s and 80s as well. So, you know, sort of like a hierarchy that was explained to me by people. So like all things being equal, the cover is king. Then it would be a double page spread splash would be next. And that's the two page image that I was just talking about. Next would be a splash page, which is like a full page inside page of the comic. And then panel pages would be next. So then published is better than unpublished. And then, you know, commissions and stuff like that are a separate thing.
So
that's like unpublished stuff.
Just for our listeners to kind of recap here a little bit. So you've been collecting all these different types of covers. You've been able to turn some of them over for a profit. They're all original artwork, and you find, or what you're saying, an original cover page is worth the most, and then a two page splash, then a one page. Full page, you know, full panel splash, and then just a regular comic panel thing would be the last.
Yeah.
And then a commission may, that can vary all the way depending on who made it and what they did, right?
Yeah, so like Jim Lee charges like, I think, $15,000 for a commission. And then...
Because he's Jim Lee.
And then I don't have a commission from him, but I have four from John Byrne. And those were like, he doesn't even do them anymore, I don't think.
Sure.
I got X-Men, four different X-Men commissions, and they were like $750. I got a Neil Adams, I think it was $800 or $900. So, I mean,
it's,
you know, but they're nice.
That's what you're saying.
No, it's definitely not. So, I mean, but there's stuff you can get. Like, I mean, if you like Ultimate Spider-Man, Mark Bagley, there's a ton of that out there. Stuff like that is a couple $100.
Sure.
But I mean, if you wanted like a Jack Kirby cover or something, it's not going to be $200, right? So
well,
if you wanted
sure
a Ditko Spider-Man page, you know, that's going to be five. You know, so I mean, that's going to be high five figures, low mid five figures, depending on what's on it, maybe six figures. You know, there's people that were in this early, like a lot earlier than me. You know, 1980s, 1970s.
Right.
And they were buying this stuff for like here. So I've got, you know, $25, $30. So I've got, let me show you this one real quick.
And not to be ghoulish, but obviously the artist living versus the artist dead is going to make a huge difference in the price.
Maybe. I mean, that doesn't do much. So This one, this is a four page by John Buscema from issue 216. And on the back, it says $45. I don't know if you can see that.
Yep, I can see it.
All right. So another interesting thing is on the back here, there's this piece of old tape. Looks like there was another piece that fell off, and then this one was replacing it. So that tape is there because here, over here, there's a cutout with an X-Acto knife. Some of the letterer made a mistake.
Oh.
They used an X-Acto knife to cut out a word or something that didn't belong there. And then they put a piece of white paper behind it, and then they taped it so that way it wouldn't be – so that way you wouldn't notice.
Kind of like a fancy version of whiteout.
Yeah, so, you know, this page is real neat. It's got a real nice panel of Thor there, and it's got this guy, this gem god guy named Zor that was this, like, gem god, I guess, is what he was calling himself. And that's from, like, 1972 or 1973.
And when you say it was priced at $45, when was that priced at $45? I mean, did you buy it for $45?
I did not buy it for $45. Okay. I mean, so what I'm saying is people got into this thing early and, you know, stuff was, you know, I don't know if that's what it was sold for in the 70s or if that was what it sold for in 1990, but at some point that sold for $45. And, you know, I paid a lot more than $45. So, so, you know, people got into this early where, you know, in the 70s and 80s and even the early 90s, people were buying this stuff. Sure. I mean, I didn't even really know about it. I mean, I was buying, you know, Giant Size X-Men number one, like a $100 copy back in, excuse me, back in 1988, you know. And I sold that and got, you know, this cover behind me. So, you know, I got, you know, so I wasn't really interested in this. I didn't know anything about it. It wasn't something that was I was exposed to. But there were people out there buying this stuff that were exposed to it, going to conventions, buying it in trade magazines, you know, and the stuff was $30, $45, $50, whatever it was. But, I mean, so people were buying, you know, stacks of this stuff for cheap, and then they had all of a sudden they had like $1 million collection, right?
So what, you know, got, 'cause they bought, what got you into it?
I think I got a copy of Jack Kirby Collector or something, and I saw that and I said, oh, I didn't even know you could buy this stuff, you know, probably in 2000 I saw this.
Sure.
And I didn't rush out and buy anything, but I was thinking about it and looking at stuff, and I said, you know, I'd like to get some, like, a George Perez, like, Avengers page from this current run. Because, I mean, I didn't have a ton of money to spend on this stuff. So, you know, I did that, and I started getting into it. I liked it a lot more than the comics because it was a one-of-a-kind item. You know, there's no other ones that are there. So, you know, some of the other stuff I got – was into was, you know, so, you know, I talked about how I sort of passed up. I missed out on some of this stuff. Oh, there was this. This is in 2010. There's another one. It was a New Teen Titans page from, I think, Annual 2. It was the splash page. And it was or Annual 1. It was something like that. It was the one where they were fighting in outer space against Blackfire. And it's got Donna Troy as Wonder Girl front and center. And she's like surrounded by all these monsters and stuff. She's fighting all these guys. That was like $1,800 in 2010. And I mean, I think it sold fast. Like, I mean, it sold really fast, like in like a day or a few days after some reseller had it on sale.
Sure.
That's another one that was like kicking myself not getting that one. You know, I missed out on a lot of these things. And then I was, you know, always sort of into this. I was going to get a Jack Kirby page and all this stuff. But I sold my comics. I had the money to do it. And it was hard for me to pull the trigger on it. I know that sounds weird. When you had the money in hand, you know, I had you know, almost five figures. I have four figures. And I'm like, I ended up getting the cover behind me, and I ended up getting the Jim Lee Superman double page spread. That's really nice with that money. You know, and, you know, I felt like I wasn't getting, the bang for my buck.
$8,000 to $10,000 for a piece of art. I mean, you got to really love it. Yeah, no.
Right. So, I mean, there's stuff out there that's, you know, six figures now, and, you know, McFarlane Spider-Man covers $500,000. The first page of first appearance of Wolverine, $500,000. You know, these Killing Joke pages, I think the floor is probably like 80,000, 90,000 for one page. You know, the,
there's only so many pages of these things. I mean, the comic.
Right. So, a Killing Joke, there's like 48 pages.
48
pages. So one of the ones I didn't miss out on was JLA Avengers, the George Perez, Kurt Busiek JLA Avengers. This has got an interesting kind of story to it. You know, this was like 2003 or 2004, this book came out. And the pages were almost all going to be 500. I think that a splash might have been 750. And then there was a double splashes were either 12 or 1500, something like that.
Sure.
So there was going to be a one page limit per issue you could buy on this book, on these four issues. So it was 48 pages each, plus the covers, about 200 pages total. So, it was $500. I was like, okay, I'm going to get this. Like, I really was disciplined and sort of saving money to get this page. So the book came out, issue one, and there's only, you know how many pages the JLA characters and the Avengers are in that, are on the same page in that story in the first issue? Take a guess.
None, I don't think.
48 out of 48 pages.
Out of 48 pages? I'm trying to remember that story, but I was thinking there were none. That they had it separated out. It wasn't until the second or third issue, but I'm probably wrong about that.
So there's five, maybe six pages, depending on. So there's three pages starting with page 35, 36, 37, where the characters, it's the first meeting of the teams. They don't talk. They sort of interact. There's this MacGuffin artifact thing that they're both trying to get.
Sure.
And the Avengers get it, and then the JLA steals it back. Well, the JLA got it, and then Hawkeye uses an arrow to steal it, and then Wonder Woman grabs the arrow and steals it back. Then they sort of, that's it. And then that's the whole interaction. It's three pages. So I have the middle page of that, and then at the end, I think Superman gets hit with Thor's hammer, and that's a splash page. And then that might have been like $1,000. And then the last two pages were a double page splash, and it was both teams together, like ready to fight. So I got page two of the three of them interacting. And there's probably only – there's not many pages. I mean, there's probably about half, maybe a little bit over half, where there's a lot of the characters together. All right, so this is the page I have, and I think you'll be able to see it better. So this is real neat. You've got – this is page two of the three where they interact. You've got Hawkeye and the Scarlet Witch here.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Iron Man. Then you've got Green Lantern, Superman, Wonder Woman's arm, Quicksilver, and Wonder Woman, okay? And the inking on this page is really different.
Right.
Like Wonder Woman isn't filled in all the way. And then down here, this is the reason I like it. They're not filled in at all. They're just sort of outlined like a coloring book on that page. And then right beneath it, it's the same image almost again, except it's colored in, okay? Then at the bottom are more of the JLA characters, okay? So this page I really like. I like it because it's got all of the JLA like the main JLA characters are all on there.
Sure.
In the same panel. I like that it's the, and it's mainly a JLA page. The other two pages in that interaction are more of, they're much more equal or more Avengers centric. This is more of a JLA page. One of the weird things with this particular title, you had, so issue one is called Avengers JLA on the written page because it was published by Marvel. So issues one and three are Avengers JLA and issues two and four are JLA Avengers, but everybody calls it JLA Avengers. I mean, that's what it's called. And this was the one that was published. There was a JLA Avengers in the 80s that Perez did that never saw light of day. And I think he drew almost the whole book. And then Rob Liefeld bought all those pages and then he sold them or something. I don't know. So, you know, that's probably the most, I get a lot of inquiries on, not on all my stuff, but that's probably the page that people most want to inquire to buy from me. And none of my stuff is for sale. You know, but, you know, people inquire about that page and, you know, I've had it 17 years and, I don't see it leaving anytime soon. That doesn't mean that there's no price. Okay. So, I mean, so on comicartfans.com, that's where you can find a lot of the stuff. Sure. If you were interested in looking at Spider-Man, John Romita Sr. or something, you could type that in the search box. It would take you to it. If you like Art Adams or Neil Adams, X-Men, you can find it on there. If you find stuff to buy, you can look at what other people have. You can find it from dealers. Excuse me, versus regular schmoes like me. And if they have it for sale, there's a separate section that will show that. So none of my stuff is listed for sale. You know, I intend on keeping it forever. But that doesn't mean that if somebody didn't give me an offer that was, you know,
ridiculous,
really good,
yeah,
I wouldn't consider it. So, but
given all that, so I get you love these pieces of art, and I will showcase most of these for in the podcast. Many of you may have been seeing some of them already, and I'll probably showcase the rest of them because there's some really nice artwork here. And you want me to show your link or share your link or just show the artwork?
No, I mean, you know what, people can find it.
Okay,
well, I mean, if you go to Comic Art Fans,
sure.
And if you do like JLA Avengers issue one, page 36, you know, it'll come up.
It's not a problem. So we're showing all this artwork. We're showing all these things that you've been collecting. Now you have a beef. Given all that, you're speaking as a guy that has a lot of passion for original artwork, and you're looking for pieces of art that are somewhat distinctive. For instance, the JLA Avengers, you've talked about that quite a bit. And you've got a few others here where you're trying to find something that, even if it's a panel page, if it's not a giant splash page, which you like the giant splash pages, you've got that one of Batman and Robin until he puts the mask on. But
yeah,
given all that, you're having some concerns or some issues with the industry. So take us into that.
I mean, okay. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about dealers, I mean, so, and auction houses, I mean, let's talk about that.
Well, whichever one you think is causing the most problems.
Let's talk about them both.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a lot of shady customers in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, so say a guy bought a ton of stuff in the 80s and 90s. And then he opened up his own dealership and he's got $1 million collection. He starts selling it off. So there's two different kinds. Okay. So let me start with this thing called Cool Lines. And that's these two brothers. And they're the Donnelly brothers is what they're called. And I've talked to one of the guys. He seemed like an okay guy. Like, I mean, I didn't have a problem with the one brother people have a major beef with. The other one's okay. The one I talked to is the one that people think is okay, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as a guy goes.
Sure.
But, you know, they're sort of, you know, they have some sort of unscrupulous kind of practices. So, you know, they'll take a piece of artwork and they will embellish it, I guess is the best way to say it. So they'll take, you know, I sent you the link to it. There's a Spider-Man, a Superman cover, Superman Annual 7.
Sure.
Cover. And in that cover, there was an image of Superman that's a trophy. And I believe, based on what people have said, and I don't have any, and they've shown, I mean, they've posted it. It's not like they believe it. It's true. There was a, the what they bought was just that trophy of Superman. Well, the published cover had all these different stats of things on it and everything like that. Different Superman stories, things like that. You know, Superman's mystery power, Superman's first wife, Superman becomes president, and this logo and all this stuff. They added all that stuff to the artwork. I mean, they added it themselves. So these
stories, were they in the comic and not on the original cover? It was just
So they were on the cover that was published by DC.
Okay.
But in what they bought, none of that was on there. They just bought that Superman trophy.
Why do you think they did that?
Why did they buy it, or why did they add that?
Why did they add all that in there? What do you think was their
to make it look like the published thing?
Okay,
but that's not the way it was done in the production process. See, so here's my beef. I like things the way that they were done when they were published. I don't like if the lettering fell off. You know, I don't like it replaced. I wouldn't really buy anything that had the lettering missing, to be honest. If it's got mold or water damage, stuff like that, like changing it, the thing to me is the same as damage. That's damage. You know, they've got a JLA Avengers page and they added lettering. So modern page, if you looked at my Thor page that I showed, I was talking about, mm-hmm. That's got the lettering on the page.
Sure.
And that's from 73. Now, if you had a page from, I think DC might have stopped it in 2001 or 2002. Marvel probably stopped it 97, 96, something like that. Where they do the lettering digital. They do it separate.
Right.
Well, these guys will add the lettering on the thing if it wasn't even there. I mean, they'll create it and glue it on the board. They'll buy something that was like an unfinished, like a commission. They'll buy like a commission and they'll say it's an unpublished cover. Stuff like things to, and then the other thing is they don't have any prices. All their stuff on their website, it says inquire. So if you inquire on Monday, it's $1,000. You inquire on Wednesday, it's $2,000. There's no consistency. There's no consistency with the way things are priced over there.
I would absolutely agree that altering an original cover is bad. But I'm a novice. I don't know. You know, I know what I see as far as what the cover looked like when it was published, right?
Right.
And I'm not trying to play devil's advocate here. I'm looking at this more as how do you warn a person to be careful about this kind of thing? If I knew that cover that you're talking about, I know that the Superman trophy cover had those four things on it.
And right. That's what they're counting on.
Right. But. But if I want to,
that's what they're counting on when they sell it, is that you know it has that stuff on there.
You know it has that stuff on there. But what I'm saying that if you are wanting to get an original and you run across an honest person who has that cover and it doesn't have any of that stuff on there, you know, how am I? It's like, are you sure this is the original? It doesn't have any of the stuff on there. And I'm sure they could tell you, but I guess what I'm saying is, how is a person, you know, first getting into the business, how they protect themselves a little bit? Because it wouldn't look familiar, right? You would look at it, right. That doesn't look right. It had all this other stuff. He's like, well, that's not the way the original cover was. They put that on after. This is the original. And you go, Really? You see what I'm saying? So what's your advice to people is what I'm saying.
I mean, my advice would be not to buy from those guys.
Well, from the Donnellys, I've never heard of the Donnellys, right? I've never heard, you know, how much, where's a good place? Right. So I guess, what would you tell people? Where to research, where to talk to people? How do you know what's good and what's bad?
So I think that if you have questions, a good place to go is this CGC board, cgccomics.com.
Okay.
There's a message board there that'll about original art. So if you think something's a fake, or if you want validation that something looks right. So, I mean, there's guys, somebody, there's a good one. Somebody did a forgery of a Jack Kirby Avengers page, which is, seems like a pretty time consuming thing. So, and, it looked pretty good. They're like, something about this doesn't seem right. Is this thing real? Because the price was priced really low. It didn't, it was priced like 10% of what it should have been or whatever it was.
Right.
So somebody said, well, here, let's look at the other pages from that issue. So that had Avengers like written in like a black pen. Well, the real pages from that issue are written in like, it almost looks like a red crayon, Avengers.
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's a crayon, but I mean, I just saw
it's sketchy.
Yeah. So I mean, so the real ones are written in red ink or crayon or whatever it is,
right?
Marker, whatever was written on there, and the margin is much thicker, than the other one. So I mean, there was no consistencies between the two things. And then another thing that I'll say about those guys. Is there, people said this, and I don't know, I don't have any firsthand knowledge, that they did this, right? But there's this, show bidding.
We want to be careful, but if we're talking about things that we've heard that we cannot necessarily or firsthand verify, so we're not telling people that, please don't call our lawyers, we don't know this for sure.
Right. So, but I mean, this this altering the artwork stuff, I mean, that's well documented, they've done it to covers and other things. I mean, I've seen the cover before and I've seen it after, mm-hmm. More on more than one occasion.
Sure.
So then the other thing I'll say is show bidding, and I'm going to go into that in detail here in a second.
This is on the auction side of things.
Yeah. So these guys, now what is show bidding? So, You have a page that you think is worth $6,000, say, all right? You think it's worth $6,000, it's for sale on your website, $6,000. You decide, I want to get the cash quick, so I'm going to sell it and get, $5,000, between $5,000 and $7,000 is what you expect, right? So, the thing, you put it up there, and it looks like it's going to sell for two. All right, so, and there's no reserve. You didn't put a reserve on there, so if it doesn't hit 5,000, you're not going to sell it. So no reserve auction. So whatever you sell it for, you're taking the risk.
Explain when you say reserve.
So you can have a reserve where if it doesn't hit the threshold of the price, it won't sell. It won't sell. You keep it.
Okay.
But a no reserve auction, it's the first bid's a dollar. If no one else bids on it, you buy it for a dollar.
So it's
if
like
it's worth, yeah. So if it's worth $6,000, hey, if no one is interested in it, it sells for a dollar. If there's no reserve, that's it. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. But the shill bidding is like market fixing. So these guys think the page is worth X amount of dollars, $6,000. And if it's not, they're going to not lose money and not impact the market, right? So if it sells for $2,000, that impacts their whole inventory of that art, because it's really not worth $6,000. It's really worth $2,000 or $3,000. So then they have somebody come along and do a shill bid and get it up to $6,000. Like their friend buys it for $6,000 and then gives it back to them, and then they give them the money back, right? So then, or whatever, they work out some sort of deal.
Right.
So they're not the only ones that do this, or that allegedly do this. I'll say allegedly.
They're artificially inflating the bid.
And artificially inflating the market, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, say, you know, because then people think, well, the other thing is, you know, what if they show the bid and then somebody bids more? Say it was going to go for, it was 2,500, they bid it up to 5,000. And then somebody wins it, somebody that's not related to them wins it for 5,100. Well, that person should have won it for 2,600 or whatever, right? So, I mean, you've ripped somebody off in addition to manipulating the market. You made somebody pay more than they should have paid.
Well, I mean, what when you're talking about paintings and auction, first of all, is this something that probably happens at a lot of different art auctions, not just this sort of thing? And
I don't know.
If the guy pays 5,100, he's prepared to pay 5,100 for a piece of art, then that's what it's worth, regardless of whether or not. Now, I agree with you that it's shady. I do agree with you it's shady. But if you're saying the guy got ripped off, it's like, look, if he hasn't been doing his homework on something in an auction situation.
But he knows. But the thing is, the market was already artificially inflated through the bids, through the comps on the dealer's website, that sort of thing, right?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Here, are you saying that there may be a bubble bursting soon?
I wouldn't put any money down on that at all.
Yeah.
I don't believe so. So here, let me go about this. Here's a guy that admitted to this show bidding. His name is Ramita Man. Ramita. All right. This guy, okay. Ramita Man. I'm gonna read his own words. Okay. And this was from 4 years ago, but all right, okay. All right. So somebody figured out that this guy was doing this practice. This Ramita Man was doing this practice. This was in 16. So here's what it says. This is his own words. Boy, oh boy, now I know why I don't go to this particular chat board that often. This is on CGC, which I mentioned before. Right. I go to Las Vegas for a week to relax and bet on a few football games for the weekend, .. All right, let me stop there. That should tell you everything you need to know. All right. Okay, so I bet on a few football games for the weekend. And I have to get calls from fellow art collectors telling me I'm being dogged on this website with claims I have shady business practices and I'm doing backdoor deals with Heritage Auctions. I'll get into Heritage Auctions in a second.
Okay.
With screwing and cheating people over to boot. Firstly, I want everyone to know I'm the most open-minded, transparent guy when it comes to comic art, and I will always respond to any email if anyone ever has a question about anything, all caps, art related. Just ask, all caps, me, and you will get a response. So with that being said, I want to thank Glenn Gold. That's the guy that figured it out. Right. I want to thank Glenn Gold for starting all this up. With a little help from a few misinformed others piling on. And instead of people being grown up and simply sending me a private email about this for a response, it is now blown up into a very false accusation from others who now have made this like a comic art version of the JFA conspiracy. All right. I haven't even gotten anything yet, but you know how this is going to be.
He's already getting dramatic, but okay.
All right. It gets better or worse depending on what you think. Firstly, so it's firstly again. Firstly, I buy, sell, and collect art. If I choose to sell art on my website, I do it. If I choose to sell art on an auction, I do it. I have no special deal with Heritage. Every piece of art I give them has zero reserve, all caps for those two words. That art still sells at Heritage, and Heritage still gets their 19.5% buyer's premium on top of whatever the gavel price is. Now, all caps, what everyone is speculating about and giving their non-facts about, if I give them a piece of art that I feel is worth X dollars, parentheses, all at no reserve, all is in all caps, end parentheses, and I see that my art I gave them coming up at auction at way less than the X dollars I feel it's worth, I will ask any collector I know to buy it and I will work out whatever trade or cash trade deal I have to do for them to get that piece back if it sells for well below what I feel, all caps, is market value. And I'm happy to put it back on my website and pay the 19.5% heritage premium on top of the deal I do with the collector. That is not bad business. It's called being smart and knowing your art market enough to know that you feel somebody truly is worth something truly is worth when others do not.
Well, as long as you feel it, this isn't the force, guy. You gotta, it is worth what people will pay for it. Period.
That's exactly
not
right.
What you feel it's worth. So yes, I'm 100% on board with you on this.
All right, so I'm not done yet. I'm going to read the whole thing.
No, I want to hear more. This is going to be
good.
Fun.
In my latest Remita Man website update on January 14th, that's January 14th, 2016, because this was 4 years ago.
Gotcha.
I put up 10 pieces or so, 10 or so pieces of art, which were the all caps, most recent November Heritage and Comic Connect auctions that I owned for several years. Parentheses. I felt the prices were low enough that I worked a deal with another collector to get them back because I felt they were very undervalued. So we did a deal and I put them back on my website for sale on January 14th. And in less than 5 days, 7 of the pieces I had for years, all caps, on my website were now sold, all caps, last week. So how is that bad business? I usually lower the prices a little also from their previous listed price from years ago when I put the art back up for sale. It certainly cost me, quote, a lot of money, end quote, and art to do this, but it's worth it for me in the long run as it actually helps, all caps, me get a better feel for how strong or non-strong parts of the comic art market is also. Now, it's great to see that some of our astute, all caps, art collators here on this website, it says collators, not collectors, here on this website figured out that art on my website was also sold on Heritage or previously in a Comic Connect auction. So I say congrats for figuring that out. However, I've been doing this for over 14 years, all caps. I've given Heritage over 2,500 pieces of art over the years to auction off, and I've worked out numerous deals with other collectors to get 100 or so back if I felt the price at auction were undervalued. I think that's supposed to be was undervalued, and I could sell it for more on my website in the future if I just gave it time. Glenn Gold was the first guy to finally figure this out. Kudos to him for that, but bad kudos to Glenn for choosing to post it in a public forum, whereby my reputation gets unfairly tarnished by people not in the know who are now questioning if I'm cheating people and doing backhanded deals with Heritage in the process. I usually don't give vital comic art business advice to others in our collecting field, but I'll do it here right now for everyone to read. All of this is in capitals. What something sells for at auction does not mean that is what it's worth. It just means it's sold for that price on that particular day.
No, that's wrong.
I know.
I'm sorry. Okay. That's totally fucking wrong. I don't have to go into it. That's wrong.
All right, so you can go into it. Let me finish. I've got a lot more.
Okay. Finish up. I'm sorry. I mean, I think we get the gist here, but if you got
no. This it gets better. I mean, thing's great. I laugh when I hear collectors posting all the time about why something is priced at a certain price, or being offered at that price when it's sold all caps at auction for less. I've spent over all caps $3.5 million at Heritage since 2002, buying artwork strictly for resale. Yet people keep going through auction archives to tell me and everyone else what an art should be worth based on auctions. Ha ha. Auctions are like mini price guide, if you want to call it that, but it's just a guide. One-of-a-kind items not set in stone in any guide. Just as an example. All right. I'll do this and I'll skip down in a minute.
Right.
I bought the McFarlane Spider-Man number 3 cover at Heritage for $28K or so, right after Amazing Spider-Man 328 and Spider-Man 1 cover sold for $647K and $360K each. I put the Spider-Man 3 cover on my website 1 month after the auction for $52K, and I sold it in less than 1 day. So tell me, is the Spider-Man number 3 cover worth 28 if it's sold for auction, or 58, 52K? All right.
Okay.
So hold on here. So
I'm just
then
saying.
he starts into the sales pitch stuff. But let me go down to the next part. There's some good stuff here. Maybe others will hide and run away when people call them names behind a keyboard, thinking they personally are judge and jury. But I'm very open for a good debate, so long as the grade school comments and pictures are left in other forums for the children in the room.
Oh, for God's sakes.
That being said,
welcome,
let's have this debate on shilling. In my opinion, a shiller bids solely, all caps, to make someone else pay more, period, all caps, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. There are no shillers in a no reserve auction. All three of those words are in capitals. Because if you win it well, you win. Those last three words are in all caps. Please tell me how someone is a blatant shiller when they win the auction. I've never in my life shilled an auction I didn't plan on winning, period. 4 exclamation points. I was honest on here and said I had someone bid on my pieces in no reserve auction. All three of those words are capitalized. Because I'd rather get that piece back, realizing the market was not strong for that piece, and pay the 20% buyer's premium on top of that versus having my piece sell for a song. I'll hang on to it. People want to call me names and question ethics. That's their business. I had several friends contact me privately who told me to not even comment on this because they said this forum will be a one-sided, and they themselves didn't even want to comment because people will keep commenting and calling me names and trying to ruin people's reputation if they comment. I feel my 27 years of collecting, as well as dealing in comic art, speaks for itself.
Okay, so
all right, so,
here's my first. Let me ask a couple of questions here. One, he says he's making deals with other comic book or comic dealers, with other collecting dealers, right? So he isn't. Yeah, it takes two to tango, right? And hold on, let me get this because you made your thing blow.
I just sent you the link to the thread.
Yeah. So if he's doing that, he ain't the only one with his hands dirty, in my opinion. And two, what is his status now? Has he been like drummed out of the business, or is he still?
No, he's still operating.
He's still doing the same thing then.
Well, I don't know if he's doing the same thing as far as the bullshitting goes, but his website still exists. I mean, he's still selling artwork.
Okay.
And so, I'll just say I've never bought anything from him. I've never bought anything from Cool Lines. I came close on Cool Lines, but I never bought anything from either one of these guys. So let me go to the how this ruined John Romita Sr.'s birthday. This is the best part of this whole thing.
Oh no!
All right, so hold on, I gotta find it. It's ridiculous. This is the most ridiculous part of this whole thing, and I'm gonna try not to laugh during it because here, hold on. You might have to edit this.
That's okay. I was planning on doing a lot of editing anyway.
All right, so hold on. Let me find. There's another. And if you type in Romita Man Show, you can find all this stuff.
Okay.
Maybe it's not this page. Maybe it's page 3. I can find it somewhere else. But it's in here. Hold on a second. Romita Man Show. If you type in Romita Man Show in Google, this will come up. All right, so hold on. All right, here it is. All right, so I'm ready to go. Okay, so then this is the next part. He says, I haven't read many posts for the past 2 days, but I wanted to send this email out before I went to bed tonight. Firstly, I want to tell everyone who has been reading this thread on the or three, maybe even five threads bashing me with the ongoing threads that I take full responsibility for my actions. I know many won't believe this, but I truly didn't realize I was doing anything perceived as illegal, but it will be 100% corrected going forward. I am definitely not a perfect person, and I do make my fair share of mistakes in life. I made one here according to so many, and I feel terrible about it. I also want to say that I apologize for this profusely, as it made many collectors I've dealt with throughout the years question my integrity, and this issue will not happen again. The Heritage people and I have talked on the phone about this issue also. So again, I want to apologize to any and all people who this affected in a negative way, as I do appreciate and value everyone I have ever dealt with in this great hobby of ours. With me saying that, I do have one very negative thing that came from this CGC thread that upsets me greatly. Let me just caveat before I get into it. This whole thing is absurd, and when you hear it, I mean, just imagine how ridiculous this is.
Okay.
I found out today after I got home from church. Okay. That's how it starts. After he gets home from church
on Sunday. That's nice framing. Yeah. That's wonderful.
I find out today after I got home from church that my good friend, John Romita Sr., had left me a phone message. So I call him up again to wish him a happy birthday. And he tells me, sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's ludicrous. He tells me that someone called him this morning, and then Sunday on his 86th birthday. Like, what? So it's Romita Sr.'s 86th birthday. Somebody calls him and tells him, hold on, wait, I'm sorry. Okay, so somebody calls Romita Sr. on his 86th birthday, and they ask him if he approves
of Romita Man.
If he approves of Romita Man using the Romita name on his website, since Romita Man is not a single person.
So he, this has got you in stitches. I get it. So somebody from the press, or just somebody in the industry, calls John Romita Sr.
On his birthday,
if he approves
on his 86th birthday, to ask him
birthday.
If he knows that Romita Man is basically a crook, insinuating that I lie and cheat others. That's what it says.
Do we know who that was?
About how ridiculous this is.
Do they know who that was that called Romita?
No.
I mean, who the hell has Romita's number?
Apparently this guy does.
Or he's full of shit making it up.
Yeah, but the whole thing, I mean, just think, I mean, I'm not laughing. You know, I'm laughing because it just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy goes to church. He does the shady stuff. He's going to church. He comes home. Romita Sr. calls him. And somebody called Romita Sr. and it's 86th birthday. And to tell him that Romita Man is a crook. I mean... Does that sound like a story?
That sounds completely legit. I believe all of this that he's talking about. Yes. Sounds totally legitimate.
So,
some stranger calls John Romita because he just happens to have his phone number, apparently, and asks him this stuff. I don't know. It sounds like there's a lot of shady dealings going on in this. Now, one thing you mentioned. How are you doing on time?
I got a little bit more. So let me go to 10 days later. So all this is in January of 2016. Then on February 5th, there's a second thread that Romita Man starts called Romita Man Response to Everything Going On Recently, where he tries to walk everything back that he admitted to. He admitted to everything. He said it wasn't wrong. How can, like, 10 days later you say, actually, I didn't really do some of these things, and I didn't really start doing these shill bids 14 years ago, like I said, and you know, all this stuff. And it's out there if people want to read it. I mean, but the good stuff I read. I mean, the stuff that's
so
that's interesting.
So a month or a week later, it looks like, in February, he decides to walk back everything that he admitted.
Maybe not everything, but I mean, he definitely tries to put it in a new context, right?
I see.
So it starts. Let me just read a little bit. He says, "When this first happened, I couldn't respond quickly because I was out of town. I took a red-eye flight home, and the very first thing I did when I got home was get to the computer to post and clear the air before I went to bed. I probably should have proofread my words a little better, as it seems that everything I wrote in my first two posts were turned around me to make me seem like I was evil and smug and uncaring." All right, so then he starts to re-explain things. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the stuff that he first said is the true stuff, and this stuff is not probably true, right? I mean, that's maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I read.
I mean, it's hard to say when you talk about posts and that sort of thing. So tell me, let's move on. I just want to follow up on something you mentioned earlier. Tell me about the Heritage auctions.
Oh, all right. So this is disclosed on their website, and they're in Texas, and it's not illegal, I guess. And you can look this up, and it's documented on the CGC boards and other things. You know, so they have a thing where, say you something's for sale on there, and the current bid price is $1,000.
Okay.
And you say, you know what? I think I'd be willing to pay $10,000 for that. So you can put a bid of $10,000 on there, and it goes up to $1,100, $1,200, whatever it is. Okay. Whatever the increments are, right? Somebody working at Heritage can put your bid up to like $9,999. Somebody working there can make you pay pretty much the maximum amount. They can change with no intention of winning, right? They can just bid it up to like right under your threshold so that you're paying your maximum bid.
So you're saying, okay, so you got a piece of art. It starts out at $1,000. And you say, I'm going to put up to a maximum of $10,000 bid on that.
Yeah.
If it goes at 5,000, then I pay 5,000 because I'll still have the highest bid. And you're saying that somebody on there will just start bidding to get
the employee. Don't know what your bid is.
So they know that you bid $10,000, and whatever the bid is, they'll keep bidding up to your 10 grand maximum.
Yeah, I think that they actually see your bids. They can bid right. They can bid.
So they can squeeze more money out of you.
Yeah.
So don't bid then, the maximum. Bid as it goes.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I guess there's it's a two phase. I don't do business with them either.
Right.
So, you know, let me say something about the good dealers out there. Anthony Snyder's like the great. He's a fantastic dealer. I've worked with him for 17 years.
Okay.
18 years.
Is he Albert Moy. You want to plug?
AnthonySnyder.com.
Okay.
AlbertMoy.com. It's another one that's good.
All right.
You know, I mean, those guys, to me, some of these guys like Cool Lines, they're more collectors before dealers, right? They're dealers. They'll sell it if you want to pay like top dollar, right? Like over top dollar. Like their prices are higher than full market value.
Sure.
You know, other dealers, they'll work with you, you know, in a better way. And Ramita Man says he'll do trades and time payments and stuff. And that's all fine. You know, but these other guys, Anthony Snyder, Albert Moy, you know, they're Will Gabriel, he's good too. I bought from him. Greg Land, RGL Art, he's good. And these are all people I bought from and I know. You know, I never bought from Ramita Man. I never bought from Cool Lines. I probably won't. I mean, so.
Well, I mean, just the drama alone. I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know enough about it. It sounds shady to me, but maybe this is, you know, sometimes the shady things is actually normal operandi in some certain, you know, I don't think so, but, you know, you never know. But the fact that it's come across, it's come this, you know, that it feels wrong, it's like it's probably not worth getting involved with.
I mean, it's so, you know, if things aren't illegal, they're seemingly to be unethical. And I'll leave it
right,
at that.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, why get yourself into a mess? So, well, this has been, I learned a lot. I'm still, you know, a little out on the outside looking in, obviously. This is all news to me, but I think it's an interesting take on the original comic art collecting field. I don't know if you guys got a name for this hobby or not, but
that's probably it.
But it sounds like that there's a, you know, it's becoming a big business, and there's a lot of shady players in the business. We are not, you know, 100% fact saying that these things actually happened, because
except for the ones that somebody put in writing that they did.
If they were documented or put in writing, I mean, we're just reporting on what we saw. But you know, I'm just doing the standard journalistic grain of salt type of thing. We are reading what we're saying. We're formulating our own opinions based on what we're seeing, which seems about as accurate to me. I don't think you're out to get anybody or anything like that. You're just you're passionate about the hobby, and you want to kind of bring to light a little bit of what goes on in it. And I think it's it's a little bit of a departure from what we usually do, but I really enjoyed it. So, yeah. Anything else you want to talk? Are you got to run off, or I can talk about?
No, I can just. I think that's probably it. I want to show maybe one more thing, and then that would be it. Talk about maybe one more page.
Sure, go ahead.
So you know how I talked about how I sort of missed the boat on some things, and didn't want to pull the trigger. Well, they're here. You know, Alan Davis Excalibur. That's always sort of something I was into. I liked it. The early issues, like the first.
Yeah,
the special, and then issues 1-7.
Yep.
So I got a couple of these, and you know, this guy Greg Land, Gary Land. He had pretty much almost all these pages, right? So he sold them. He's got his own website, RGL Art. But I got a couple of these from him, and this is from issue 3. It's got Kitty Pryde up on top. This is a memorable page. I mean, I think a lot of people remember this page from issue 3, where he sees her like alternate doppelganger. So I have a page from issue 3 and a page from issue 1. Happy to get them. I mean, they're, you know, it was sort of like there's a definite supply versus demand problem, you know, that you have. Those are hot commodity. This guy had them for a long time, and he started selling them. So it was like a ravenous feeding frenzy almost to get these pages. So I was I'm happy to have gotten two.
What's your prized page that you have? What's your favorite?
I'd probably say that the JLA Avengers or those two Excalibur pages I have. I mean, but I like, you know, my cover. I mean, honestly, like if you're not talking panel pages, my cover is probably it. And if you're talking panel pages, those Excalibur pages are probably the top for me, because it was like I wanted them for a long time, and I finally got two. And yeah, two that I really like.
Is there any artist you wish you had that you don't?
You know, I'd like a Dave Cockrum Uncanny X-Men from the first run.
Sure.
I'd like a Jack Kirby Fantastic Four page. John Byrne, a real Byrne Austin X-Men page. I mean, there's stuff out there. You know, Romita Sr., Spider-Man. I mean, there's definitely stuff out there that I'd like. But, you know, not at the expense of what I have. I mean, I'm pretty happy with my collection as is.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I could get some of these things. I mean, I have the, between cash and the artwork, I can make it happen. But, you know, I'd rather have not three pieces instead of, you know, I could either have three pieces of art or 25, right?
Right. Sometimes quantity is better than,
well, yeah,
they're all, but I mean, quality, I like, in my opinion. I mean, if you get the one you like, yeah, it's quality.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so, I mean, I like, you know, I like stuff that, you know, when I was young, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, buying either new or back issues. That's the kind of stuff that resonates more with me.
So you, and with everybody, so you have else a heavy nostalgic factor for it.
Yeah, but I mean, even, excuse me, so even like artists I buy, like Jim Lee, I mean, even though I'm not getting an X-Men page, you know, I've got a Superman DPS, I've got a Batman DPS, you know, I'm happy to have them. Sure. You know, they're great. So, I mean, I've got nostalgic for the comics when I was young, but I also have nostalgia for those, the artists I like.
Okay. Well, Ben, this is, I gotta say, it's been super interesting because it's not a field I have too much exposure or familiarity with. So I kind of, you know, listening to you talk, you clearly have a lot of passion for it, and hopefully this will be pretty informative or enjoyable to our readers and listeners. So,
and sorry to John Romita Sr. if his birthday really did get ruined. I didn't mean to laugh.
Well, it is bizarre, and I have a feeling that it's not true. But, I will. All right, so I'm going to go ahead. I think over an hour. I think we've got plenty. So,
all right, great.
Thank you very much. This has been great. And those of you who have been watching, remember, lastmovieoutpost.com. Find us on Twitter at DrunkenYoda1, at Movie Outpost, or on Facebook /LastMovieOutpost. We will be having more of these on the podcast and on YouTube. So please like, share, subscribe, and please, you know, share out this content. The more subscribers we can get, the more reach we got, the quicker and easier it'll be for us to build up, get more content going. So if you like it, would really love you to help us out. Ben, you take care of yourself, and we'll see you next week, maybe.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.